Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome. This is Colleen O'Grady, the host of the Power Your Parenting Moms with Teens podcast. This is a gathering place for moms to be encouraged, nurtured, and inspired. Also, you'll learn the latest in teen research and trends and get practical parenting tips. You really can improve your relationship with your teen and enjoy the teenage years.
Welcome back, everyone, to the 176th episode of Power Your Parenting Moms of Teens podcast. I'm Colleen O'Grady, the host of the show. I was so excited to read Publisher Weekly review of Dial Up the Dream. See, Dial Up the Dream means so much to me. And sometimes when something means so much to you, it's hard to really capture the essence of the book, but I really feel like they did. So here's what they said. With a focus on the challenges, obstacles, stressors, and traps for the mother-daughter relationship during the tricky emerging adult stage of teen girls' lives, therapist O'Grady offers clear-eyed, practical guidance for mothers about facing drama, rash decisions, and general edgy teenness with love and understanding, all while protecting the daughter and the relationship. Quote, though your daughter is less dependent on you and spending most of her time with her friends, you're still important to her, end of quote, O'Grady writes, even though she acts like you're not. Throughout, she writes with the patience of a friend, but the authority of a therapist, addressing common fears, worries, and travails, reminding readers that their feelings are familiar and natural, and offering help to calm them. Quote, expect it to be messy, she writes, of a daughter's experimentation with adult selves. Whether she's warning against prying, illuminating what transpires in a young person's not quite mature brain, or addressing how to handle a daughter's setback and disappointments, O'Grady proves assured and inviting, offering wisdom. Quote, as a consultant, mom's role is one of a coach, end of quote. That her book exemplifies. It's a work of first-rate coaching itself. The guide addresses many everyday issues. Smart, concise action steps, exercises, and chapter summaries round out this polished, approachable volume. So I truly hope before the summer ends, moms, if you have daughters who are going to be juniors or seniors in high school, that you would grab a copy of Dial Up the Dream. You can order it on Audible or get a print book or an ebook, whatever is convenient for you. This would be some really wonderful summer reading. Many moms out there wonder if their teen has ADHD. Well, I have invited back Dr. Noreen Russell. Last year's episode number 127, actually about a year ago, we talked about strategies for disorganized, unmotivated, and ADHD teens. Dr. Russell has recently published her new book, Asking the Right Questions About ADHD Before, During, and After Your Child's Diagnosis. Dr. Noreen Russell began Russell Coaching for Students in 2009, now a premier national coaching practice for middle school through college students with students across the U.S. and Canada. Her passion for providing support to frustrated students and weary parents is fueled by her own experience of raising two complex children who are both neurologically atypical. Her children's diagnoses include autism, mood disorders, ADHD, giftedness, and learning differences. Dr. Russell knows firsthand the exhaustion parents face as they day in and day out seek solutions for their out-of-the-box children. So welcome, Dr. Noreen Russell.
It's so nice to be here. Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, so you were here on a guest on my show about a year ago.
I was, and we got to talk about How can we help moms with their kids with ADHD with strategies for at home and at school and all kinds of other things? We had a great conversation. It was really fun.
Right. So we're going to do part two of that, really, kind of dive deeper a little bit. But first, the question I ask every one of my guests is, are you a mom? And if so, what are the ages of your kids?
I am a mom. And actually, interestingly, my kids are in a completely different developmental place than a year ago because, you know, those tween years happen quickly. So mine are now 14. My son is 14 and my daughter is 12. And a year ago, they were in still that kind of sweet spot of being tweens. And we are definitely now in the midst of adolescence and teenagerness. And on the one hand, it is fascinating to watch them grow into the people they'll be as adults. And on the other hand, wow, testosterone in my 15-year-old boy is something that I think I could live without.
That's great. Yeah. And so you just published Asking the Right Questions About ADHD Before, During, and After Your Child's Diagnosis. So why did you write this book and who is this book for?
I wrote the book because in the last 14 years of running my student coaching practice, I was finding that I was having the same conversations over and over again with parents. And I was suggesting that they ask the doctor, the school, the therapist, the same questions. And so it seemed to me that there really was a need to educate parents about what do you need to be asking in your role as an advocate for your child? And I think that the need for that goes even deeper. And what I think happens when a child is potentially ADHD or is getting diagnosed with ADHD, it is a diagnosis that unfolds really unlike any other, except perhaps autism. If your child breaks their leg at the softball field, right? Somebody comes along, they take them in the ambulance to the hospital, the emergency room calls the orthopedic doctor, they get the x-rays, and there's a whole treatment plan that is laid out. The parent does not have to figure out the treatment plan. Same thing happens when your child needs eyeglasses. You're like, does my child need eyeglasses? Does my child not need eyeglasses? Can they see the board? You know, whatever it is that brings that to your attention. Then you go to the ophthalmologist or the optometrist, and they tell you, okay, today we're going to dilate the eyes, and today we're going to do a test to see how well the child can see. And then we're going to make the recommendation that the child either get glasses or doesn't need glasses yet, or maybe could try contacts, right? Once that child with, you know, an illness, a disorder, a medical event is handed over to the medical field, they make the plan. What's fascinating to me about ADHD, and same is true with autism, is that there really is no one person who takes over treatment of ADHD. And so because that person is the parent, I wrote the book to educate parents about, as you're gathering your team, what questions do you need to be asking? Because you don't get told these questions when you get handed the diagnosis, but you do become the team lead. And sometimes you're not even clear that you are the team lead. There's no one else who's the team lead. There's no orthopedist guiding the whole process. You, mom or dad, you're the one doing it. And so that's really the point of the book is, you know, less than 200 pages. What questions do you need to ask of the developmental pediatrician, the neurologist, the, you know, nurse practitioner, the school, the teacher? It gives you the information and the power that you need to become the team lead, to advocate for your child, and to create a treatment plan, because none of us as parents ever thought we would be the team lead in creating a treatment plan for ADHD.
That is so wise. Yeah, moms don't think they're the team lead on this, but you're absolutely right. And they don't have a clue. And so your book, yeah, I've read it, and it's really easy to read. And you just kind of get right in there and say, here's the information you need. Here's some resources. Here's some websites. So it's super handy. Like a parent who is just feeling like they're drowning with, I don't know what to do next, can just flip it open and get what they need really quickly. So this is a really big gift to moms who are dealing with children with ADHD or wondering if their kids do have ADHD. So you divide the book into before, during, and after the diagnosis. Can you tell us why?
For sure. Yeah. There are, of course, so many parents who are thinking, is that ADHD? Are these teacher's notes telling me something more than he can't focus in class? You know, and the teachers are in a hard position. They can't really say you should get an evaluation, right? And so parents are kind of having to decode, okay, what does that mean? Am I just getting notes from school? Is it not a big deal? When you're in that pre-diagnostic stage, you're always trying to wonder, is it enough to go make the appointment to have the evaluation? And really, we don't talk at school or in the psychologist's office or sometimes even in the pediatrician's office about, yes, the definitive answer is yes. According to the American Academy of Pediatrics, the definitive answer is yes. If you're seeing behaviors that could be symptoms of ADHD, the American Academy of Pediatrics in the 2019 white paper says, go and have the evaluation. So don't think it's just the teacher, it's just COVID, it's just third grade, it's just sixth grade. If you're seeing what looks like ADHD, then have the evaluation. The evaluation may say yes, the evaluation may say no, the evaluation may uncover something else. But I think that place of, do we need an evaluation, is such a murky area because there's so many things that we get told to write it off to. Well, you know, his teacher this year isn't so great, or, well, you know, he was out a lot. Kind of doesn't matter, because when you look to what do the medical experts say and what does the research say, if you're seeing signs, then you need an evaluation. And so that's why we started there, because that's where the confusion starts. Wait, is somebody going to tell me to get an eval? Is school going to tell me you need an eval? School's not going to tell you that, right? Is the pediatrician going to tell you to get an eval? They might tell you to sit tight. They might say, yeah, have an eval. Like, you need to know as the parent that the American Academy of Pediatrics says, yes, if you see signs, you should get an eval. That's perfectly clear. And that's why that's the first part of the book, because it lends clarity to a time when parents are really struggling with, what does this mean?
I mean, that is so true. I mean, as a therapist for 28 years, I see this. I mean, this is, you're just naming real truth about what moms feel. So before we jump into the next part, I think what's confusing, and you can kind of clear up, is that there used to be an ADD diagnosis and now there's an ADHD diagnosis. So if they're just saying an ADHD diagnosis, you might think, well, my kid's not hyper, so I guess they don't need an evaluation. Can you clear that up?
Oh, I wish I'd sat on that round circle, right? So what happened, and we just have to look and laugh a little bit, right? Because some things are just so irrational that they're going to give us a chuckle. So we used to have the two diagnoses, right? ADD and ADHD. It made perfect sense to most people. You had ADD, which was inattentive, and didn't have that hyperactivity. And then you had ADHD that had the hyperactivity. I think you would agree
that those labels made perfect sense.
Perfect sense.
I was not at the round table when they decided that the one label was going to be ADHD with or without hyperactivity. Like,
so confusing.
It's so confusing. It's so confusing. The one thing I would say to parents is don't worry about the exact diagnostic label, right? Is don't worry about the ADD versus the ADHD. You know, what you're going to want to come to an understanding of with your student is what are their symptoms? How severe are they? If they have hyperactivity, is it more physical? Is it more verbal? Is it, you know, tick type stuff, you know? So right now, for whatever reason, everything is called ADHD. I really think we are moving toward calling this group of symptoms something like executive function disorder. You know, in 10 years, we're going to have a different name. But all I would really say to parents is don't worry about whether you're getting an ADD label or an ADHD label. Professionals are going to know what that means, and they're going to know that their job is to get to know your child and how their ADHD manifests. But it is super confusing. And I can't even think of another analogy in medicine, you know, where we change the name with the same symptoms. It's confusing, but parents, take control. Just say, my kid has ADD, ADHD, whatever they're calling it these days, and I need to put a team together to help them with that.
Perfect. So talk about why you have questions during and why you have the questions after the diagnosis.
Okay. So one of the most important pieces of the section that's during the diagnosis is one of the things that we see over and over again at our practice, and we see over 100 students a week, is that parents are confused about where do they go to get the diagnosis. This is super frustrating, right? If you have a kid with asthma, everyone knows what kind of doctor you go to for asthma, right? If your child happens to have the gross misfortune to have cancer, you know you're going to an oncologist. Stop and think for a minute. When you ask six people, where did they go to get a diagnosis for ADHD? You're going to get six different answers. Well, we got an evaluation in school and they told us. We went to the pediatrician. We went to a neurologist. We went to a licensed psychologist. We went to a child and adolescent psychiatrist, right? We went to a holistic doctor.
A therapist,
right? And so, of course, as a mom, you're thinking, I want to go to the right person. I want to get the most information. But why are all of these different disciplines and professionals able to diagnose something? Why is it so confusing? And part of it is just that ADHD overlaps in all those fields. And part of it is that a school evaluation is different from a medical evaluation. And so one of the things that we wanted to demystify in the book is, yes, you can go to people who have been trained in five different disciplines and understand what you're going to get from that. If you go to a licensed psychologist, you are going to get a heavy focus on the academic testing, the IQ testing, learning differences. So if you're at all concerned that that might be happening along with the ADHD, that's a good direction to start. If your child already has psychiatric symptoms like a mood disorder or mood dysregulation or autism, going to a psychiatrist for the ADHD diagnosis is going to be helpful because you're already in that space. If your child has seizures, right, then you may want to go to the neurologist. But it's such a long decision tree of who do I go to? And some of these professionals are covered by insurance and some aren't. And so this long decision tree of, okay, I guess we need an eval. Who do I go to? I'm going to ask everyone on my block, and I'm going to ask everyone in my Facebook group, and I'm going to ask the people at the PTA, and you're going to get all of these responses back. And so it's one of the first things that's in part two of who do I go to have this diagnosed? You can go any of those places. Just understand that from neurology, they're going to rule out certain things that are brain-based. In psychiatry, they're going to have a focus on mental health. If you go to a licensed psychologist, they are going to have a focus on mental health, but they're also going to have that education focus. And so that's the middle piece of this. What questions do you ask during that I think is so very helpful, along with the how do you differentiate what does the school do and what does a private evaluation do? And when are there situations where you might need both?
Right. I really like that you went into the, because I think this is so confusing for parents, the IEP versus the 504.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It is so confusing. So your 504 basically allows you to have accommodations. It will say, in order to level the playing field, the student with ADHD can have extra time or can test alone, you know, and those decisions are all made by the team at the school. And the younger you get them in place, the better off you are. An IEP can be more difficult to get in certain states and in certain parts of the country. And what an IEP does is not just provide accommodations, but provides additional services. So if your child has ADHD and a learning disability like dyslexia, you're going to have an IEP because school is going to need to provide services for that reading disability. Now, technically, it would be very possible that you could have an IEP just for ADHD and be getting services, but there are not that many schools who are trained in teaching executive functioning. And so most of the time, kids with just ADHD will end up with just a 504. And it's mostly around extra time for tests or extra time for getting homework in, and sometimes a quiet place. By the time you get to high school, you know, that 504 is certainly not the biggest punch in your bag. You know, starting at age six, medication is your most powerful tool. But parents often think, oh, well, school's taking care of this because he has an IEP. Why is he still, you know, not doing well in school? Well, it's because we need multimodal treatment.
Yes, yes. So just to make it even more confusing, it's not just one thing for these moms who are the kind of the team leader of this. They have to put like multiple approaches, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the research is 100% clear that the kids who do best with ADHD have multimodal therapy. And we have to also take into account that only about 30 to 40% of kids with ADHD only have ADHD.
So, right. So I mean, that's crazy. So 70%, mm-hmm. It's like kind of at least a dual diagnosis.
It is. So wow. Now you're managing what is needed for the ADHD, which is medication, parent education and training, school plan, and skills training. And then let's layer on, just for example, let's layer on autism. Let's say autism is a thing that comes along, right? Well, what is it that we need to treat autism? Well, if there's anxiety that comes with the autism, then we need a therapist. Therapy is not called for in ADHD, but the anxiety that goes along with autism or some of the behavioral treatments, now we need that person on the team. And so it's like you have your team for ADHD. Now you need to add your team for the next disorder. And then you know as well as I do and I have kids who have multiple diagnoses, then you have a team for the next diagnosis. And all of a sudden you have a full-time job as a care manager because there are so many pieces that need to be in place for a kid who just has ADHD and anxiety. You've got, you know, whoever's building the skills, you've got a therapist, you've got a medical professional, you've got school, and you've got yourself and whoever you're partnering with. That's a lot of people to manage.
It is. So I'm going to go back to something you said.
Okay.
So the biggest bang for your buck, I guess, I'll think of a different expression.
Yeah.
Is medication.
Yes. The American Academy of Pediatrics is very clear. This is a paper anyone can read. It's open to the public. It's a 2019 publication. It is just an updated version of a 2018 paper and a 2011 paper that summarizes the state of research. And so they break it down into age groups from 4 to 6. Behavioral interventions are first line treatment. Starting at age 6, although they do say that if those are ineffective, medication may be used between the ages, you know, under the age of 6. Starting at age 6, medication is first line treatment, and that, you know, combined with the other aspects of multimodal treatment from 6 to age 12 is critical. Interestingly, at age 12, medication is still first line treatment, but the effectiveness of some of the other modalities drops in terms of effectiveness. And so then your medication becomes an even more important piece of the puzzle because the effectiveness of a school plan or parent training becomes less supported by evidence. But medication is first line treatment starting at age 6, which I think is something that if you're not in psychiatry or pediatrics, like if you're in the mental health piece, I'm not sure that that gets covered in training, really. And so psychologists get very concerned with, and they offer up their area of expertise, which is great. How do we handle this at school? How do we handle it at home? How do we handle it, if you will, behaviorally? But if we're not getting at the core neurodevelopmental symptoms, you could seat that kid in the front of class from first grade all the way through eighth grade. And if the core neurological symptoms are not being addressed, you might have some small effect size, but you're not nearly going to have the success of a complete multimodal approach. I really think everybody who treats ADHD needs to get on the same page and start following the American Academy of Pediatrics. Like, look at what are the treatment recommendations, and everyone should be talking about that. It's not that psychologists would be prescribing medication. That's outside their scope of service. But to simply say, the American Academy of Pediatrics says multimodal therapy is what is best. These are the components. This is how you would do it.
What I know from my work as a therapist and also listening to a lot of moms, they're really hesitant to put their kids on medication because they don't want to become addicted to it. They're concerned about the long-term consequences of being on medication. Is there anything you want to say about that?
Well, what I would say is those are questions that then we take to the medical professional, right? If those are your concerns, then we take them to the medical professional. And we ask those questions, right? The same way we would ask questions if our kid had to go through chemotherapy, the same way we would ask questions about, you know, putting our kid on a supplement, right? Now, what do we know from research about ADHD medications? We know that ADHD medications are the single most effective class of drugs in the psychiatric group, right? So that says something. We know that 70 to 80% of kids can get significant symptom reduction from taking a stimulant. We know that in contrast, to kids becoming addicted to drugs, being on a stimulant is actually a preventative factor for becoming hooked on things like alcohol or weed or you know, vaping all the time. So it's interesting, the conversation of fears is actually not grounded in science, but rather grounded in fear, right? Yeah. And so if professionals took a more proactive advocacy stance on medication, we might be able to change that conversation, because certainly there are side effects to the stimulants, for sure. But overall, when you look at the research that looks at kids who had multimodal treatment versus kids who did not, or kids who took medication and kids who did not, the treated group does far better in school, in avoiding negative life outcomes, in achieving a college degree, in avoiding drug and alcohol misuse. And so for me as a child advocate, it's very frustrating that we're not doing a better job somehow interdisciplinary in getting this message out. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. What people think is medication should be last to try, when in actuality, the science says medication should be the first thing you try. And again, from a kid's perspective, I don't want a kid starting to think they're dumb, they're stupid, the teacher doesn't like them, I'm not good at school, I'm never going to graduate high school, I can't go to college, like nobody likes me. And we try to shove all of this individual level intervention at the kid without realizing that if we don't have the intervention at the neurological level, all we're doing is adding pressure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I saw this with my own daughter when she was in middle school. Like, it would take her forever to get homework done, and she was starting to think that she was dumb. Mm-hmm. And was feeling bad about herself, and she got on medication. And I mean, I saw a huge difference. Like, what took 3 to 4 hours took her an hour. Her grades went up, her confidence went up. So I've experienced that firsthand.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to the questions that you should be asking after the diagnosis.
Okay. So I think there are a couple really vital ones. Is I'm always suggesting to parents, ask whoever you're talking to, whether it's the pediatrician, the nurse practitioner, ask, what is evidence-based scientific treatment for ADHD? Ask them. Ask them to explain it to you so you are educated. The first time I heard that there were logarithms for using medication, I was like, really? Because it seems like they just kind of throw stuff at you. Try this, try that, try this, try that. When I learned there were actual logarithms that psychiatrists use to determine which medicine to try first and how long to try it, I was like, oh, well, that makes perfect sense to me. Ask, what is evidence-based, science-based treatment? I would say also ask, why are there so many different ADHD medications? Ask the doctor to explain it. And then another one that we advocate asking is, are there over-the-counter medications, supplements, and things that we can do versus prescription medication? And which one is going to have a bigger impact, right? Because we kind of tend to think like, oh, I'll buy this focus supplement and that will help, right? But what we want to get to is, what is the impact of that? Are you going to have a small impact from the supplement, or an impact that is equal to prescription medication? Now, for some kids who have severe ADHD, you might do the prescription and add on some of those supplements so that you get even better control. My fear is that a parent will think they are equitable. Well, I can buy this over-the-counter focus medicine or supplement, and I'm going to get the same level of symptom control. Probably not. The other thing I would say is there's a section in the book that starts on page 105 that gives a very specific list of what questions should you be asking for your grade school child, for your middle schooler, for your high schooler, and for your heading off to college student. So we work with college students here, and we're actually developing a very robust first year at college program that we're going to launch next year. But everything changes when that child goes to college, and we have to be aware of it. But let's not jump into that. So page 105 is, what questions should I be asking for my grade school ADHD child? And some of them that we have in here are, how do I learn more about ADHD in grade schoolers? Can my grade schooler benefit from ADHD coaching? How do I help my child's teachers understand ADHD? Because there's such a gap between what the teachers learn and what we know to be medically true. Another question we have in here is, how often should teachers be providing feedback to the medical professional? So these go on and on for elementary. We have some middle school specific ones. Should the medicine change now that they're getting older? What does ADHD look like in kids as they're going through puberty? Should the 504 or IEP change during middle school? So these are just, as we follow the child developmentally, what comes up, what becomes relevant. For high school, we suggest thinking about, when is the best time to ask for teacher feedback on classroom symptoms? And our reasoning is you should ask at the beginning of the day and the end of the day, so that you're getting some information about, is the medicine kicking in soon enough, and is the medicine lasting long enough? And then for college students, you want to ask whoever it is that's on the team, how many students with ADHD successfully make it through the first semester? How many successfully make it all the way through college? What do we do about medication for college students? And how do we help college students adhere to medication? Another question in this section is, what are the consequences of untreated ADHD in college, right? Student goes off their meds. They're like, I got it. I did great in high school. And so what we do for every question in the book is we summarize the scientific information. What do we know from research? And then every single question has a section that says, looking for more information, and at least one, but often three or four references you can go to if that's an area of concern for you, and you can look up more information. So it is, I would say, a good handbook. We give you the quick answer based on science, and then any of these questions that you are struggling with or wrestling with, we give you a vetted, science-based website that you can go to learn more.
I mean, that's so great, because there are different questions when from grade school, middle school, high school, and college. My listeners know that I have just published a book also called Dial Up the Dream, Make Your Daughter's Journey to Adulthood the Best for Both of You. And I'm starting at around 17 through 25, because I think these years are so confusing for moms. Like, they don't know what their role is. Mm-hmm. And kind of like the kids are just adults at 18, right? And, you know, so moms, what does that mean? So I answered all those questions. But one of the chapters I talk about is that mom is a consultant. She's not a monitor anymore, because the kids have to learn how to self-manage. Mm-hmm. Part of what I feel passionately about is, often in college, without you managing your teen, things come up to be treated. Things come up that need to be dealt with. And so a lot of times, moms, you're continuing on that team leader. Mm-hmm. And so just knowing some of this information, Noreen, that you're talking about, I think that's great. I think that moms we want to believe that when our kids graduate and they walk out the door, they're done. Mm-hmm. They're fully baked and we're off duty and it's all good. And I think that's because of the fear of letting go. Mm-hmm. But what you just said in terms of the things around college is really true. They might have their ADD medication. They might want to sell it. They're not consistent with their medication. Like you said, they don't think they need it. So if you saw this as just another developmental stage instead of a big failure of your kid, then that helps you be savvy and be a better consultant to know, like, it is a possibility that your son or daughter may think they don't need their medication in college, that they've got it. So I love what you say, because it's like, it's not being negative, it's being realistic, it's so that we have a plan.
Well, I think it's being 100% realistic. Development can be delayed. Development is delayed in kids with ADHD. And if you layer on one or two other diagnoses, development is delayed. But there's a very clear literature out there that says what is helpful from parents during college and what is not helpful. And so as we move forward from being a manager in the younger years, right, to a coach, to a consultant, we have to be building our skills as a parent, right? You can't still be managing it in college.
Right.
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 And you have to teach your son or daughter how to make use of you as a consultant. There's a very deliberate way that you introduce that dynamic and that you share with them, okay, this is when you're going to call me. It was funny. I picked up my 12-year-old daughter from camp yesterday, and she was talking to me about the bees in the outside lunch area. And she was like, Mom, I've asked them a couple of times to clear the bees up. I don't know if I'm allergic to bees. I know there are people there who are allergic to bees. And could you help? And I was like, Lila, I just launched right into it, Colleen. I was like, I will always be there. I love that you are coming to me and asking for help. I love that you've already done what you know how you can do. And yes, I am calling the camp director right now to say at the outside lunch tables, there are swarms of bees that you are not comfortable eating around, and you are concerned for your friends who might be allergic. This, Lila, is what I want to always have happen the rest of your life. I could be in the middle of $1 million deal. If you call me and you need me, I will answer. I will be there. So ask for what you need. And if I notice that you might need something, but you're not asking, I'm going to ask you if you need help. But it was like, I had her and just her in the car, and she was really upset about the bees. And it was just this beautiful moment to reiterate, yeah, you try to fix it. You do that. That is awesome. It's totally age appropriate. Then you come to me as your mom coach and you say, Mom, this is what I did. What else can happen? I'd like you to. I was like, so proud of you. I'm just so proud of you.
That is so perfect. When they're asking you that, and you're right, that is a skill training. That is, yeah. And so my book is a ton of skills for moms. It's for moms. I mean, I'm talking about the daughters and how to best stay connected and be helpful. But there are some skills that are not intuitive for mothers. So that's why I wrote the book. And the reason I know that is I went through the stage with my own daughter. So I know it's not intuitive. Any last advice for the moms listening? So probably most of my moms have middle school and high school kids.
Okay. You know, I would say, this is the thing I always say, is nobody's life was made or broken on the basis of middle school or high school. If you don't feel great about where your kid with ADHD is at, then get some help. You know, like, it's not that it's so important that the student does beautifully or perfect. It is important that you maintain your relationship. It is important that you don't lose your mind. And it is important that the student's moving forward. So if we can be of any assistance in that process. Our website is russellcoaching.com. We actually, for your listeners right now in 2022, if anyone is interested in getting student coaching, we're offering 10% off 3 months by referencing this podcast. And
oh, that's great.
Yeah, 10% off for 3 months. And I also offer parent coaching for parents who have ADHD kids or complex kids. And I think that that is important. But I would say mostly to moms, if you know you need help or you know your kid needs help, reach out, figure out what that can be, but also exhale a little bit because there's a lot of brain maturity that still has yet to come.
Yeah. I want to add one thing is for the moms listening is some of you moms might be in the place of just in the beginning stages of just more labeling your child as lazy. They don't care about school. So I would encourage you to challenge your labels and make them more medical, like go to a doctor and maybe transform a kind of a judgmental label into a real biological diagnosis. And go ahead.
And then we start calling those behaviors symptoms. You know, they're not behaviors, they're symptoms. We don't say when the child has an epilepsy attack, wow, we really ought to decrease the level of behavior of their epilepsy. No, we're trying to figure out how do we control their symptoms. It's not behaviors, it's symptoms.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, this has been really helpful. I know it's going to be helpful to the moms listening. And so again, you've just published, how long has this book been out?
3 weeks.
Okay. So it's hot off the press. So asking the right questions about ADHD before, during, and after your child's diagnosis by Dr. Noreen Russell and Heidi Condre.
And it's on Amazon, Kindle, and paperback. And we're super excited about it. We've had good sales so far. And mostly, we think we've written a book that is pragmatic and helpful and will empower parents. And that's what we wanted to do most of all.
Yes. And you did that.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right.
This concludes this week's episode of Power Your Parenting Moms with Teens podcast. If this podcast has been helpful, I would absolutely love it if you could go to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review. This makes it easier for other moms like you to find the support and encouragement they need. Also, my award-winning best-selling books, Dial Down the Drama, Reducing Conflict, Reconnecting with Your Teenage Daughter, and my newest release book, Dial Up the Dream, Making Your Daughter's Journey to Adulthood the Best for Both of You. You can find both of these books wherever books are sold. And you can find other great resources and contact me at ColleenO'Grady.com, and that has 2 L's and 2 E's.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.